This is the Frogcast.
Hello and welcome to the Frogcast, where each week we talk all things TCU, Big 12, and college football. This is the inaugural podcast of the Frogcast, where we are reporting this by frogs for frogs. I want to take a few minutes here just at the beginning, at the very first podcast that we do, to introduce ourselves and the team that's going to make this happen every week. Trey, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, my friend?
Well, thank you, sir. Trey Fallon, graduate from TCU 2007, radio, TV, film. Love the frogs. So excited to be part of the podcast. I do some writing for purpleminutes.com, so you might see some of my stuff there as well. But I'm looking forward to it, and the season is approaching, so I am extremely excited.
That sounds good. I'm excited as well. Daniel, why don't you take a second and tell us about yourself as well?
Hi, I'm Daniel Southern. I'm not actually a graduate, but been a Frog fan my entire life, 31 years, third generation lifelong super fan.
Third generation. That I bet they sat through a lot of ugly defeats in the end of the Southwest Conference in your family.
Yeah, I got to give props to my dad for sitting through a whole lot of just absolutely, you know, terrible stuff. His dad got into it back in the 30s with Sam Ball and all that, and I, of course, was brought up on it, and it's a good time to be a frog.
Well, I blame Jackie Sherrill for all of those ugly wins with players that got $100 bills. So.
Definitely.
I am Jeff Mitchell, and I am the oddity. I am in suburban Chicago, but I follow the Frogs with a savant-like addiction. I absolutely love everything and breathe everything TCU. I graduated from TCU in 98 with a degree in religion and history. And you'll listen to me a few weeks, you won't believe it, but I actually have a degree from Bright Divinity School as well. I graduated in 02, and my job when I'm not consuming all things TCU is I'm actually a pastor of a church here in suburban Chicago. So any of the rare Big 12 fans or TCU fans in Chicago, I'd love to connect with you one of these days. Actually, the guy that does the Faux Pelini Twitter site lives about 3 miles from me. So that's
wow.
My claim to fame is nice. That I know who that guy kind of sort of is. So that's all we got going for us in Oswego.
That's a good account. If you're not following it, you should.
You absolutely should. And we'll give you at the end of our podcast tonight a way that you can follow us on Twitter and keep posted on everything on the Frogcast. We're going to kick it off with the most pressing topic in the Big 12 and, more importantly, in national college football, and something 10 times more important than that, which is campus safety for people that are just trying to go to school. It's easy to make fun of Baylor. They give us a million reasons to do that. But this is not something we necessarily want to make fun of. This is something that we want to talk about. If you're not aware of it, we have an ugly, ugly situation where a former player from Boise State transferred out under difficult and ugly circumstances. Art Briles took him into the program at Baylor. And just a few months after being on campus, he was in a situation that he was later convicted of for rape of a student at Baylor as well. There is all kinds of he said between Chris Peterson and Art Briles, and it's an entire ugly incident. It's just hangs over a cloud like Waco in the Baylor football program. So, Trey, you follow this closely, I am sure. What are your thoughts in terms of what happened? Who is to blame? Is this just something awful that happened that's easy to kind of, you know, weed through the past and think if they would have done this, this wouldn't have happened, knowing that that might not be true? Tell us what you think about what's going on at Baylor.
Well, I think there is two very important, I guess, time periods or time frames when it comes to this story. I think the first important thing is, like you mentioned, the Briles and Peterson conversation. What was said during that time was, you know, Briles informed that there was a sketchy history with his girlfriend and all of that, or did Peterson basically say what Briles is saying, is that the kid was just basically homesick and depressed? And so I think, you know, that's a key right there in and of itself, which also is not a huge factor, because I think the even bigger issue in the whole story is how the whole issue was handled once the player got on campus, and then once the, you know, accusations came out. I mean, they let Sam and, you know, Jane Doe remain in the same classes. They didn't even remove them, you know, from the classes. It just seemed like they didn't really even care about the woman at all in this situation, and they kind of went out of the way to defend the football player, and I don't think they did their due diligence with the case to follow up and, you know, really find out the details of what went on. So, you know, it's just real sketchy in my opinion. You know, I've seen, you know, like you said, it's fun to make fun of Baylor, but in this situation, it's not making fun of Baylor. It's shedding a light on a situation that they handled extremely poorly. And, you know, I think this is just the beginning of what is going to come about from this. There's obviously going to be, you know, some lawsuits involved. You know, is Kenneth Starr serious about this investigation, mm-hmm. or is just Baylor kind of doing a, oh, we'll investigate ourselves type thing? So I think there'll be a lot more to come of it, but just based on what we know right now, I think it's a very disappointing and sketchy situation.
Worst case scenario, you protect the guy that can rush the passer and throw the victim under the bus. I mean, that is the worst case scenario. That is a possibility, just in the facts that we know. Trey, do you think that there could actually be some serious fallout to the university, let alone the football program, if that is actually what happened?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see Art Briles get fired. I think there'll be some people associated with Baylor that will probably lose their jobs if this, you know, goes to trial. You know, maybe if they settle outside of court and not a lot of it comes out. I don't know. I'm not a legal expert, but I mean, I just, when you look at what we know and how it was handled, it just seems like, I mean, Art Briles has to take some responsibility in this. I mean, he brought this kid to Baylor, and you know, even if he wants to say, there's also the problem of, okay, you can say, one, he knew and didn't care, or two, he didn't know and didn't want to check and didn't care to follow up and see why this kid was dismissed. Because I'm sorry, there's no coach in America that's going to dismiss an All-American player for being homesick or depressed. Like, there's going to be more to it every single time. And so, I don't know, man. I think there is – I mean, Art Briles has to take some responsibility. Like I said, I don't think he ends up getting fired or losing his job, but, I mean, it – I don't know. It doesn't look good at all. And I can't believe there's actually Baylor fans. And I know fans, you know, they're fanatical, but I can't believe there's actually Baylor fans that are, like, sticking up for this and saying, well, oh, the kid didn't never step on the field. Well, it's like, well – I mean, that's the least issue in this whole matter is how much playing time he got. That doesn't really matter at all. So quit bringing it up, you know.
Yeah, some are even blaming Boise.
Right, exactly.
It's bizarre.
Like, come on. I don't understand it.
It's that Smurf turf. That's why it happened.
Yes, that's it.
That's it. Yeah, my understanding, and I've read a lot of this, so I could have confused my facts. My understanding was he was on scholarship the entire time after he was arrested. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, what I understand is he was on scholarship.
Reported to the athletic
right.
department. Yes.
Yeah, he remained on scholarship, and graduated. And I don't necessarily know how much practicing he was doing. I don't think he was doing a whole lot of practicing, but I still believe, from what I know, like what everybody else has read, that he was working out and around the team still and still on campus, obviously.
Daniel, what's your take on what's going on down in Waco?
Well, it's kind of scary. Kind of brings to light a lot of the, you know, a lot of the underlying things that a lot of people may not understand or know about big-time football, and Baylor is big-time football now. And I don't know, it's almost got like kind of a Florida State vibe to it, as far as it's just kind of shady, and I think it's scary for a lot of people who may be getting ready to send their kids to school.
Absolutely.
You know, they, however it happened, he ended up, you know, he did what he did, he was convicted, and they let him run around on campus, and no one knew about it, and that's really scary.
What I can't believe is, in a state that eats and breathes football, that it took the Texas Monthly that writes about barbecue and vacation destinations to discover the story. And so they are the ones that published their story, and then everybody else, you know, kind of started the feeding frenzy with the trial going on. And so I, you know, I'm sure somebody sort of knew, but Texas Monthly is the one that published this big article that really triggered all of this investigation in terms of the press wanting to write about it over and over. So that is the thing that has thrown me off. Like, how many? I don't want to call it a cover up because that sounds too Nixonian. But nobody knows about this. I mean, like, everybody and their cousin knew Devontae Fields was in trouble. That happened. Everybody knew that. But how does this story not get any traction up until that point? And I wonder just how many people in Waco are not, they care a heck of a lot more about football now with their 15 minutes of success than they do protecting a student that was raped on their campus.
Well, Waco and Baylor, I think this is one of the few cities or universities in the United States where a story like this can fly under the radar. And I'm like, you know, it's not a cover up, but I do think, you know, I don't think the Waco media really pressed hard to see why was this kid not on the field or why hasn't he been participating with the team. Like, I don't really think they pressed the issue. And honestly, you know, Art Briles is the main man in Waco, and I don't think the press, you know, whatever the Waco paper is, Tribune or whatever they call it, I don't think they are trying to get on the bad side of the university and Art Briles and all that. So they didn't really want to press the issue. And I think, you know, like, I don't think the DFW media really cared that much or like knew much about the kid until it all started kind of coming to light. So I think that, you know, if this would have happened in Norman or Austin or, you know, wherever, you can name the school, you know, Birmingham, you know, wherever, I think it would have been news for a lot longer and it would have got out earlier, but it just flew under the radar.
Yeah, it absolutely did fly under the radar. The thing I wish I had the YouTube video clip of is just the press availability with Phil Bennett not that long ago, where he's the defensive coordinator at Baylor, if you don't know who that is, who a lot of people wanted to hire over Gary Patterson, which I still remember. He said that Sam was just, you know, a couple of situations away from being back on the team, that he had some personal issues that needed to be cleared up, and then he would be back. I mean, the coaching staff couldn't even say, we have a player that's been accused of something awful, and we are going to, you know, no matter what happens, review this thoroughly before we welcome him back. They talked about how he was hoping to make the field in this upcoming season that starts next week. And that just bothers me. Anybody else have any closing thoughts before we move on from Baylor? I mean, we could badmouth them all day, but on this topic, anything else we could say?
I'll keep my badmouthing to the internet.
Trey, I did appreciate what you said, that there are some crazy Baylor fans on Twitter. Now, we have some crazy TCU fans. I won't name them, but we have some crazy Baylor fans. I mean, I stumbled upon all kinds of tweets yesterday about that's both his and her fault equally about what happened. She made some terrible choices. She didn't deserve it, but she kind of asked for it. And I wanted to smash my iPhone reading all of the information that people are putting out to, quote, blame the victim. And I just thought it was disgusting. So I know that you can't hold a fan base accountable for a couple of rogue fans, but nothing good coming out of Waco right now. Nothing good. You could have said that a month ago and it would have been true, but this time it's actually real. There's nothing good coming out of Waco. Speaking of some interesting news, a story broke the other night just as camp was coming to an end for our own Horned Frogs that we will talk about, that we were losing to transfer one of my favorite players, actually, Cam Eccles-Looper, the son of Curtis Looper, who has taken our recruiting to another level, by the way. He has returned kicks. He has played in the slot for the last 2 years, was a highly heralded punt returner coming into this season. And he announced that he's transferring, not to Arkansas, but to Arkansas State, not to play wideout, not to return kicks, but to go back to his position that he played in high school, which is quarterback. Now, he would have been buried at the bottom of the bottom of a depth chart that he never would have seen if he tried to play quarterback here. But here we have a guy that, you know, he's a fan favorite. He clearly contributed. He contributed especially in that Kansas game, which I'd rather not talk about. He has seen the field since his freshman year, but I don't know what's going on with the freshmen that have come in. I don't know what's going on inside of him that made him feel like he needed to make this move, but we're losing a good player at a time that we need all the good players that we can get. Trey, what are you thinking in terms of Cam transferring, and are there any larger implications that we can't see because of him making his way to Arkansas State?
The strangest thing about this situation for me is this, the timing. I hate to lose the kid, but it's weird that he wants to go to Arkansas State to play quarterback. Well, he knew here that he was never going to be able to play quarterback. I mean, with Boykin and Hill and all the other, you know, quarterbacks and the ones coming in, like, he was never going to get a legit shot at that here. And he knew that months and months ago. You know, that's not a surprise. So it just is weird that he would, you know, go through spring camp, then work out all summer, then come back for the fall and go through this camp. And then just now, you know, 10, 11 days before the season starts, he decides to transfer. It just seems weird timing wise. I mean, I hate to lose him. As far as receiving goes, I mean, he had 9 catches last year for 72 yards. So it's not like, you know, he was a huge contributor in the passing game. It does suck losing him as a returner. You know, it's nice to have somebody back there that you have confidence in catching the ball. Because, you know, we all remember Sky Dawson and how your stomach drops every time a punt goes into the air because you have no clue what might happen when that ball starts coming.
Oh, I unfortunately know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's probably going to turn out bad. So it does stink to lose such a reliable returner. But I do think there's somebody on the roster that'll be able to step in and fill that role. But like I said, I just still think it's weird that he decided to do it now. Why not do it in the summer so you can – I mean, I know he has to sit out or he'll take his red shirt or whatever he's going to do. But just to get into Arkansas State quicker, I mean, as a quarterback, I think you would want to start learning that playbook as soon as possible. And I don't know, maybe it's just me. I didn't play football in college. I played it, you know, growing up or whatever. So I don't know. But I feel like I would rather have a small role with TCU, a team that's has potential to win a national title versus going to Arkansas State and playing more. But maybe he just wants to, you know, he just wants to get on the field more. Who knows? But yeah,
so. I don't know. I can't believe you pass up an opportunity to, you know, I don't know, if, say we win national title or not, it's going to be something probably pretty high up, at least something much more significant than what Arkansas State could pull off. Yeah. You know,
right.
I would want to play too, but I just cannot see that.
Yeah, the timing of it, I agree with you, Trey. The timing of it is, I can't wrap my mind around. If he would have done that coming out of spring ball, I would have understood it. If he'd have done it before camp started, saying, hey, I was here all summer, this is what I think I need to do. But then you throw on top of that, like you said, Daniel, you're leaving the number two team in the country and your buddies. You know, he seemed like the kind of kid that all the players wanted to be around. He seemed like a real amicable guy. And he's also leaving the track team where he was an All-American. And that's one of the things that, you know, you don't hear about. But, we have an amazing track program. Mm-hmm. And he and Colby Listenby were, you know, All-Americans on the track team. He was an All-American sprinter. He was an All-American long jumper. I don't even know if Arkansas State has a track team. You know, they might just go run in a cornfield up there or something. But he's stepping away from all of that. So it's either something awful happened, which there is zero indication of, or he just really wanted to do this. And that's where he's 21, and he's got to make that choice, and it's not our life. And as much as I think it's a bad choice, so.
Yeah, I don't have any, you know, ill will or bad thoughts. It just seems weird, you know? It just seems one of, like, a weird situation timing-wise. And, I mean, I don't necessarily, you know, I've never seen him play quarterback, so maybe he goes to Arkansas State and lights it up, and he thinks maybe that gives him a better shot at the NFL. I don't know, but I just, yeah, it seems a little strange, but good luck to him. I hope he does great.
What implications does this have as far as where Coach Looper might do something, or is he going to stay? I would really hate to lose that.
Yeah, that was, I think it was you that posted that online, actually, Daniel, that it would hurt a heck of a lot more to lose his dad than it would be to lose Cam.
Yeah, he's the man.
Cam's another fast guy on the team, and that's great, but his dad is the one that locked down so many of these recruits that have come in, that are coming in for the 16 class out of Houston. He's, you know, we don't want to talk. I'll just go ahead and be blunt. The guy used to recruit. He was on the staff that recruited Cam Newton. Now, we're not doing Cam Newton stuff, but we know how he has learned the ropes of the nitty-gritty hand-to-hand combat of recruiting. And I honestly, I think that's something that we've kind of lacked, and we're in a position to take advantage of it now. Absolutely. And he has clearly taken us to another level on recruiting. We're going to talk about that in a second. But I would hate to lose him. I don't think he's going to go take an assistant job at Arkansas State, but just for 2 years, who knows? I mean, this is a good coaching gig to have. I have a feeling he would want to step up to a higher program for, you know, coordinator's position or maybe a head coaching job at his job like Arkansas State, but I don't think that job's going to be open. So I would hate to lose Coach Looper. He has done an amazing job with our running backs. We were seamless when BJ Catalon got hurt. I think this is good coaching and good talent.
Yep, but definitely.
Yeah, I'd hate to lose Coach Looper. So. All right, fellas, moving on. We have had a lot of stuff happen in the off season, and we're going to kind of backtrack here. Let me narrate for just a second and then come back to what I just want to talk about, how we handled the most disappointing day to be a Horned Frog when we should have been celebrating an amazing season. This offseason, we've had a lot of things happen. We landed the number one quarterback in the country in the 2017 class, Sean Robinson, who is the quarterback at Denton Geyer. J.W. Walsh, the quarterback at Oklahoma State. His dad is actually the head coach there at Denton Geyer. And Robinson committed to TCU. And that is, in theory, the first five-star recruit we've ever landed. But before that, we landed another stud quarterback, Kenny Hill, who was smart enough to get out of that dump called College Station and whatever issues he was going through down there, sat out a semester, went to Tarrant County College, whatever he needed to do. It seems as if he's done it according to all the press reports from Travis Brown and other things the Coach Patterson has leaked out. We landed a great backup quarterback that's going to run our scout team, and probably, just my unbiased opinion, he'll be starting quarterback next year. We also lost Dick Bumpus, who has been our defensive coordinator for many, many years, and it's hard to imagine Patterson without Bumpus, even though he's only defensive coordinator in name only. But I will not forget the day that we got left out of the playoffs this last year. It has been talked about ad nauseum. We have listened to ESPN badmouth us for this last, our conference for this last media cycle. We got left out of the playoffs. I want to talk about how you handled it, if there was actually a way around it, and does that put us in a handicapped spot this year, knowing that we think we're going to have something special, but will it hold us back? I remember where I was when I found out we didn't make the playoffs. They did the selection show on a Sunday morning. They'd always done the old BCS on a Sunday evening. They did it on a Sunday morning. And at 11:45 is when Reese Davis and Danny Cannell and Joey Galloway were supposed to come on and tell everybody what happened. And I am a minister, and so I had worship at 11 o'clock. And we run a tight hour, so we just right up till noon. But I knew that once the word was out, I wanted to know. So I had a guy in my church, huge Florida State fan, had his phone out the whole time. And I said, give me the thumbs up if we make it, and don't tell me anything if we didn't. So his phone went off at 11:46, and he saw that, of course, Florida State, the worst undefeated team ever, got into the playoff, and he stood up and gave me a thumbs down right in the middle of me praying over the communion table. And so I learned a lot of words that I didn't learn in seminary that I wanted to say at that moment. And it just, like, I swear, I'm not trying to be I'm not trying to engage in hyperbole. I just felt deflated. I felt freaking deflated to see a team win by 52 points, go from number three to what I later learned was number six, and not make the playoffs, knowing, and I will stand by this as a blatant homer, even though it's true, we would have won the damn playoff last year. Trey, how did you handle that kick in the sack?
Man, it was really tough. Honestly, I thought, I guess 2 weeks before, you know, when the rankings came out and TCU came in at number three, I thought that was the nail in the coffin of the whole TCU-Baylor discussion. I thought that ended that, and with them being at three, you know, that had Florida State at four, so that gave, you know, a little bit of buffer. I was like, there's no way, you know, that they can drop them that far. And it happened, and it was terrible, made my stomach hurt, you know, and took that whole week to get try to get over it, and then, you know, all the painful emotions come back during bowl season, especially when you see TCU stomp Ole Miss like they do. You know, that makes it hurt even worse, because, I mean, to this day, that TCU team that showed up against Ole Miss is one of the most prepared, most just ready to get after an opponent that I've ever seen, at least, you know, top three or four times, when I've just seen them come out from start to finish, you know, put their foot down and just annihilate an opponent. It was great, but it also, like I said, makes it hurt a little more, because I'm with you. You know, I don't know if they beat Ohio State, but I do, you know, like their chances in that matchup. And it really stinks, man, because, I mean, this is another, you know, obviously you go back to the Rose Bowl year undefeated, and I still think that team could have played for a title and won it that year too. You know, may call me a homer or whatever, but if you just look at it as the NFL talent that came from that team, you know, that's how a lot of people will measure teams. You know, a lot of those Miami teams, when they were winning titles, put a lot of players in the pros, you know, and all of that, and it's like they had plenty of talent. But yeah, it was difficult to me the off season. Just touching on Bumpus real quick, I do think that's going to be a difficult task to replace him, but I do think TCU is in a good position this year with, you know, really experienced defensive line, you know, with Josh Caraway, and you've got Pearson and all of those guys. You know, I think you would feel that loss a lot more if, you know, there was three or four, you know, freshmen or sophomores on the defensive line. But I think, you know, actually TCU kind of lucks out this year by having those experienced players who learned from Bumpus, so they kind of, you know, already know what to expect or know how to perform. So, you know, it's going to be tough losing him, but you still got GP, and, you know, I think the defensive line is going to be a real strength of the defense this season, and I think they're going to need to be to keep offensive linemen off the linebackers, because I think, you know, the linebackers really unproven, and, you know, if you can keep them free to, you know, flow side to side and attack the ball carrier, they won't, I guess, you know, their inexperience won't stick out as much.
No, I agree. I think we're going to be strong on defensive line. I think the loss will be mitigated by the fact that Gary Patterson is the defensive coordinator and has been since the day he got hired from New Mexico. And we have a lot. We have so much depth there at defensive line. I love Chris Bradley. I love the way he gets after it. He looked really good in the Peach Bowl. I'm a big fan of the guys that we have coming back on the front four. Daniel, what's your takeaway from the offseason on missing the playoffs? Any changes that have happened? Anything that has really stuck out to you since the day we got left out of the playoffs, and what it was like for you to kind of process all of that garbage?
Well, I tell you, about a week or so before it came out and we got dropped, I was listening to ESPN Radio, and Britton Musburger was on, and he actually said, now watch out for Ohio State, and he gave out these, basically kind of an insider look at, you know, ratings, you know, going to take a bigger role in this than it should, and and I was like, well, okay. And then it happened. So I was slightly more prepared than I guess a lot of people. It was still a kick to the junk. But anyway, we went and we handled our business, and it was a good day to watch that.
I will go ahead and make a confession. I was pulling for Baylor in the Cotton Bowl. I got up, you know, had some breakfast, had some coffee, watched the Cotton Bowl, and I was pulling for Baylor. But then in the fourth quarter, when it looked like they were going to blow the lead, my son and I became massive Michigan State fans, and I thought, you know, if you don't believe in God, I understand that, but I believe in God after watching the Cotton Bowl, because that is justice. That is justice. And the never-ending meme of their kicker getting his clock clean, I am just fine with that. So I know I'm not the only Frog fan that felt that way. But speaking of the Big 12 and what they do in the postseason, we are kind of in a bind here as a conference. We're the only Power 5 that does not play a championship game. Some people will debate whether if we'd have had a championship game, it would have kept us in, gotten us into the playoff, or maybe it would have kept us out. But there's a million opinions about what we should do as a conference, or even if the conference is going to exist in 6 or 7 years here. So, Trey, you've been around the Big 12. You've followed Texas football for years. What's your take on what's going on in the Big 12 and maybe what we should do?
Yeah, I'm not opposed to the Big 12 expanding, but I am not really a fan of the teams that are available. If the Big 12 has to choose from a team that's not currently in a Power 5 conference, whether it's BYU, Boise, Central Florida, who, you know, SMU, Houston, name the school that's been thrown out, I just don't know if it's worth adding those. Now, if you can somehow pull two teams from, you know, an ACC or something like that, that would be great, but I don't think those schools are really necessarily in a hurry to leave. So, you know, I just don't think the conference needs to panic at this point. You can't really take 1 year as a trend, because if you look back at last season, if Ohio State doesn't blow out Wisconsin, or if Florida State isn't one of the luckiest teams in the last 10 years and actually loses one of those close games that they played, you know, either TCU or Baylor, whichever one you want to say, I'm going to say TCU, they would have got in to the playoffs. I really believe that. So, you know, and I think if you look at it this year with TCU, you know, AP poll just came out, TCU at 2, Baylor comes in at 4. If one of those two teams goes undefeated, they're going to get in. And then also say TCU drops their game in Norman against Oklahoma, but that's their only loss, and they crush Baylor at home and they crush everybody else, you know, win pretty good. I still think they have a chance of getting in because they're starting so high up. You know, one loss might drop them from 2 to, you know, maybe 5 or 6, depending on if Oklahoma's good or not this year. If Oklahoma's terrible and we go into Norman and lose, that's not going to look very good. But I think Oklahoma's going to be a pretty good team. Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, having to go on the road and take on both those teams kind of scares me, but we'll obviously get to those when that time comes. So I just don't think the Big 12 needs to panic. I think you play out this year, you've got two really good teams in TCU and Baylor, you know, and then, you know, if the biggest deal too is if just Texas and Oklahoma would get it together, or Texas Tech or something, like, y'all need to step it up and do something. Like, y'all are the ones holding the conference down. It's not TCU and Baylor. I mean, it's pitiful. So, you know, it does make the conference real unstable, and, you know, the future, you know, you never know what Texas might jump up and just say, hey, we're going independent, or we're going to join the Pac-12, or whatever the hell they think might be.
Yeah, let them go to Pullman, Washington for all
I care. Yeah, I mean, and have their game start at 10 o'clock at night Central Time. But I don't know. It just seems like it would be a rush to, because I'm not a fan necessarily of adding BYU. I'm biased, I guess, from our past, you know, conference affiliations with them, but they seem to always just destroy any conference that they're a part of.
So Texas must want them.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But so, and I mean, Boise, I'm not a Boise hater. I just think where Boise is kind of hurts them. I mean, it's more of a geographical issue. And I mean, I guess one of the Florida schools, I guess, or Colorado State, I don't know. I just,
you're not, there's fan. No good options.
There's not a good option.
I mean, this really is the bottom line. There's just no good options. I mean, if Arkansas and LSU want to come, God bless them. But that's just not going to happen. You know, it's not just that nobody wants to join the Big 12. It's that nobody wants to join the Big 12 soap opera. And when we were not in the Big 12 and fans of Big 12 schools would tell us, you know, this conference has, you know, got issues, they don't know how to all get along, I just kind of rolled my eyes and thought, well, you know, $20 million check probably makes a lot of that easier. But this is a poorly run conference, in my opinion. I mean, when I look back and think, if they could have gotten Louisville and Cincinnati and West Virginia and us, there would be none of that, what Boren from University of Oklahoma called a psychological disadvantage. And the year after we passed on Louisville, they won the national championship in basketball, and they won the Sugar Bowl in football. Like, that would have been a nice addition to our conference. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as it is, there's just really no good options left. And I listen to all of these Oklahoma fans badmouth the Big 12, and Texas fans as well. And I just want to tell them, you made this conference. You are the powers that run this. You are the ones that basically determine who gets in and who gets out. And any problem that has to do with the Big 12 now is just that you guys can't win football games anymore. It's getting beat by what, a cumulative 97-14 their last two games for Texas. That's their biggest problem with the Big 12, is that their football program is below West Virginia and Kansas State by a mile. So, Daniel, you got any thoughts on the Big 12 going forward?
Yeah, a few. I mean, like I say, I'm not opposed to expanding either. It's just not a very good option out there. There's that, what is it, the looking at that waiver for getting a being able to have a championship game with 10 teams in the conference. Yeah. I don't know about that, maybe. I don't know. I just think, you know, we got such a small sample size with just the 1 year. You know, I don't know if we can stay at four teams or if they're going to expand to eight. It's really hard to tell. There's several options. Not all of them are very good. And with what we've done so far, as far as a conference and within the playoff system, I don't know. I just think it's way too early to tell.
Mm-hmm. I think the best thing the conference could do right now, honestly, is mandate that each team has to schedule at least one Power 5 opponent in out of conference, and then the Big 12 needs to go and win the games, and that would help tremendously. And it really needs to start this year. Like, TCU needs to handle Minnesota, Oklahoma needs to beat Tennessee. It would be great if Texas could somehow beat Notre Dame. Like, that I think would be the quickest kind of fix, I guess, if you're looking for one outside of just adding two.
Well, Baylor beat Northwestern last year, right? Oh, that was Northwestern State. Excuse me. Excuse me. Yes. Whenever somebody talks about improving our non-conference, they're really only talking about one of our nine teams. I don't care about Kansas' non-conference, but that, if you want to talk about why Baylor kept lagging behind us in the polls all through the college playoff selection process, it's because of their, you know, heretical non-conference schedule. I mean, their fans should be insulted by that non-conference schedule. But yeah, I agree with you. The Big 12 should mandate that everybody plays. A lot of teams already have built in. Iowa State always plays Iowa. Iowa State always beats Iowa. We have built in games that fans want to be a part of, fans want to travel to. You know, Texas Tech has got to find a way to go 6-6 and things like that. So I think that's the upside for the conference. But I think the overreaction to wanting to expand, and I'm pro-expansion, by the way. I'm pro-UCF. I'll just put those cards on the table. I am all for a trip to Orlando every other year.
Yeah, they beat Baylor, too. So.
They did beat Baylor, so that moves them up.
They're always welcome.
Always welcome. But this was a little stat I stumbled on. In 2013, Florida State ran the table and won the national championship. The last ACC champion to have one loss or less was 2001, when Maryland went 11-1. And so we have a 12-year period where the ACC champion always has two losses. And so now I know Jimbo's got it going now, and I know Bobby Bowden was kind of presiding over a decline there like Mack Brown was. But that's a long way for a mediocre conference to always have a mediocre champion. And I could not find anywhere in terms of history, just by combing through Wikipedia, where the last regular season poll had every power conference with either zero or one losses like we had this last year. I mean, that is a historical anomaly. And of course it happens the very first year of the playoff, and of course it happens to TCU, but I just don't see that happening every year. Now, I wish we had a chance to play ourselves in, but I agree. I don't think we should overreact, and I will say I don't want a championship game with 10 teams. I think that's stupid. That's just, you know, you're guaranteeing that you're going to play somebody twice. If we think a title game knocks somebody out, I think this multiplies the opportunity to knock out a really good team. Because let's say, you know, Kansas State goes 7-2. Do you want to play Bill Snyder as the last thing standing between you and a national championship game? I don't know, the college playoff. I don't want to do that if we are 12-0. So those are just my thoughts on the Big 12 expansion. And I think it's going to be an open-ended process. I'm hoping the Big 12 sticks together. I hope that we have a future together as a conference. But most importantly, we need to go win those games, like Trey said. We need to get out there, we need to play some quality opponents, and we need to get some W's on the board, especially in the bowl games, watching how poorly the conference played in the bowl process. Well, guys, we are going to wrap up this very first version of the Frogcast. Our next podcast will drop early next week. We are going to do a preview of the Big 12. We are going to talk about Minnesota and anything that comes up between now and our next podcast. I'm sure that we will dive into it and get some feedback from our esteemed guests. So for Trey Fallon, for Daniel Southern, this is Jeff Mitchell, and we appreciate you listening to the inaugural podcast where we talk all things TCU, Big 12, and college football.